Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the poisoned needle when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance, who sat, Swinton now was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who didn't know Swinton or the press offered a toast to the independent press, and Swinton outraged all of his colleagues back in 1880 by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now you know it, and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things. And any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now you know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are, he said, the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program and the New World Order. They're the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that you and I ought to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, these philosophers, these preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order, this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and the New World Order, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first. That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything, and it's educational, and it's entertaining. It's informative. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page and download that free General Law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. Hey, we're talking about vaccinations over here, and the lady that wrote this book has dug out these statistics that go back to 1853 in England. They're the ones that started compulsory vaccination. I guess they thought it was a good idea. It made sense to them. They thought that would be the solution to typhoid fever and smallpox. So they got after it hot and heavy, and they used it, you know, through the 50s, 60s, and 70s. But they found out that it not only didn't eradicate the disease, they were finding out that in areas where they had 94% vaccination rates, that they had people dying like flies, and they couldn't figure out why. So the people got mad as hell, and they quit doing it. And the more people that quit the vaccination, the fewer people that were vaccinated, the less disease they had. So they start off with disease, and I mentioned this in the last program. I said, you know, when I was a kid, we had some girls in our public schools that were getting pregnant before graduation. And the powers that be said, oh, my God, we can't have that. And so they instituted a program called sex education in public school, and 50 years later, we have 10% of the graduating senior girls pregnant. Well, hell, when I was a kid, it wasn't 10%. Hell, it wasn't even 1%. There was only Vivian that I can remember out of 305. Now, you know, we have these imagined problems. And hell, you know, we don't want pregnant girls before graduation, and I don't deny it. But you're always going to have a couple or five. And you're always going to have disease. You're always going to have crime. You're always going to have pregnancy, whether you like it or not. You're not going to get down to zero. It ain't going to happen. Not in this world. But you can reduce it to a hell of a lot less than it is today, because the program that we're following is called the 10 Planks to the Communist Manifesto. And this program exacerbates the problem. So what happens is the secret societies, the medical profession, the press, the government, and the pharmacies, they come to us and say, hey, listen, this is what you need to do. And they educate us in our educational institutions. They tell us this is what you need to do. And we follow it and we do it. Now, from 1850 to about 1880, the people followed the program. And by about 1880, they were starting to wake up. Now, we've been following this program pretty hot and heavy since the 1950s. And it's to the point now where in the United States, where we had one out of every five getting cancer in their lifetime in 1950, today it's one out of two. Now, at some point in time, the Americans will wake up. I guess they will, and I don't know, maybe they'll never wake up, but they ought to. When you get down to a point where everything has totally failed you and you're dying like flies, you know, at some point in time you'll wake up. Here's an example of it. Through the 1960s, 70s, 80s, we've been living in relative boom times, and so our government officials have been raising their salaries and raising our taxes. But during this period, over the last 50 years, we've been making higher and higher wages, paying higher and higher taxes to public officials that are making higher and higher salaries. Well, here's the way it shook out. There's a little town named Bell, California, and they found out that the mayor there is getting paid $800,000 a year. Now, the president of the United States, you know, the top executive in the United States government, makes $400,000 a year. Here's the mayor of a little town of about 8,000 people. He's making double what the president's making. Now, it wasn't just that. The city council members are getting $100,000 each, and the chief of police is $400,000 plus. And the people of the city average $25,000 a year annual salary. And they're coming unhinged. They should have come unhinged a long time before the mayor's salary got up to $800,000. I mean, hell, there's people that are running corporations that don't have budgets and don't have salaries like that. Now, the federal government is paying double for their employees what those same employees would make in private industry. In America, it used to be the other way around. When I was a kid, you worked for the government because you wanted security and retirement, and you made about half what you would make if you were working in private industry. And then they said, well, now, that isn't fair. Public employees should be paid at least as much as people in the private sector, and so they kept increasing their pay. And they've been doing that over the last 50 years. And now the public employees are making double. I don't know when the people of America are going to rebel against that. Maybe when the public employees are making $800,000 a year while you're unemployed, maybe then you people wake up and say, wait a minute, maybe these public employees are making too much. It would seem like to me you should have woke up before now. It takes a long time for people to wake up to the problem at hand. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't and that you can't do something about it personally, you know, right here at the local level. Some years ago, I took a look at the income tax and I said, hey, I'm not going to do this. I looked at Social Security. I said, hey, this is a bad retirement program. I'm not going to do that. I can't repeal the income tax or Social Security, but I can drop out of it, and so can you. I'm not going to repeal the laws against that support vaccination. I mean, hell, that isn't going to happen. We're not going to change this. But I don't have to participate in vaccination, and neither do you. That's the bright spot. Now, 12% of us don't, and 12% of us have read some books like I told you about Dr. Robert Mendelsohn. 10% of pediatricians vaccinate their children. 90% of pediatricians do not vaccinate their children. They're vaccinating your children. Now, that's hypocrisy to the nth degree. That steers me off of pediatricians because they're hypocrites. That's number one. But in addition to that, it tells you something, doesn't it? The pediatricians know something that you don't. And they're making money off of it. Every one of these vaccination regimes in the United States makes $1.25 billion a year, and you got 35 of them, 35 vaccination regimes. This is big money for pharmacies and big money for the medical doctors, and it makes campaign contributions. You know, the pharmaceutical industry, they're out here busy promoting vaccination, passing laws, and getting campaign contributions in return for it. So it benefits the people that are promoting it. I mean, they're not promoting it for no good reason. Does it benefit you and me, the guys that are receiving it? And the answer to that is no. And the League of Nations Health Committee, back in 1929, in their monthly epidemiological report called RE-132, dated November 15, 1929, this one-time great organization revealed its biased confusion on health matters by saying, quote, "It will therefore be plain that if the conclusions are to be accepted and allowing for individual peculiarities, revaccination should be repeated every 3 or 4 years at least, or even more often." Okay, unquote. Now, okay, what they're saying to us is this. You go out and you get your 35 shots. Now, just extrapolate this forward to today. At that time, there's two shots, typhoid and smallpox. If we were to follow that today, here's what that would translate into. Your kid's 5 years old and he's had his 35 shots, right? 35 shots by age five. So every 3 or 4 years, at least, he should have a new shot, right? Okay. He's going to live to be 75.6. So for the next 70 years, and divided by 4, he should have 17 more shots, shouldn't he? So you take this kid in, and he gets a shot for measles, and he needs 17.5 more shots in his lifetime, for a total of 18 shots in his lifetime, just for measles. So let's take 18 shots times 35. You need 630 vaccinations in your lifetime, times 300 million people in our country. And this is the United Nations. Now, this is the, well, it's called the old League of Nations, you know, the predecessor to the United Nations. This was medicine. This is what they were recommending back in the 1920s and 30s. Can you see how insane this thing is? Now, I'm not opposed to you going out and getting 630 vaccinations at, times $25 each. That's $15,750. And your objective here is to prevent disease, and I've already showed you in the previous programs here, it doesn't prevent it. In fact, it exacerbates it, and your chances are more likely that you're going to get the disease if you have been vaccinated. It would cost you, pushing $16,000 in today's dollars to do that if you wanted to start that kind of a program today. He goes on to say here, Joseph Swan, S-W-A-N, comments on this in his book, The Vaccination Problem, on page 288 by saying, all of these demands for frequent revaccination may be reduced to an absurdity by asking a simple question. How is it that in England, the abandonment of even primary vaccination by approximately half the parents during the past 25 years and the almost entire neglect of revaccination at any age have been accompanied by the lowest smallpox mortality rate on record? So a guy by the name of Joseph Swan wrote a book called The Vaccination Problem. On page 288, he says, now in England, we have dropped the revaccination program almost entirely, and over the past 25 years, more than half the people have dropped vaccination totally, and the smallpox rate has gone down from what it was when we were vaccinated. So here's where the English started. They started in 1850, and they had some smallpox problem. They said, hey, let's solve it. So they started vaccinating, and they passed a law, and they said, everybody has to be vaccinated, and the smallpox problem got worse. They woke up in the 1880s and said, this is a crock of baloney, and they stopped the vaccination. And the smallpox rate went down. They got back to 1940, and they had one of the lowest smallpox rates in the world. Now, the next generation comes along. So the pharmaceutical companies bided their time, and then they said, okay, let's forget about smallpox. Let's vaccinate people for measles, mumps, and rubella. So they got 35 of these diseases, and they're vaccinating you for them today. And if you got your vaccination for measles, well, my kid didn't get measles, but he has to be revaccinated every year. When measles shows up, it almost always shows up in vaccinated people. Now, those of us that don't practice vaccination, we all get measles. And that's what we're hoping for. We want to get these four or five childhood diseases to give our immune systems permanent immunity. Now, I'm going to show you here in a little bit what the vaccination was thought of by doctors. And one of the doctors back in 1909, if I can find him here, 1909, he said that he had looked at several hundred vaccinations. I don't see him right here in front of me here. And anyway, I'll just tell you what it is. He said, out of all the vaccinations that I've seen, he said, I have never seen a case of cancer in an unvaccinated person. That's what prompted me, the last program I said, I'll bet you that there hasn't been a case of autism in an unvaccinated person. I think that these vaccinations cause disease. I think they cause cancer, heart attack, stroke, and all these, Parkinson's, and then all these diseases that you got today. These degenerative diseases that we never heard of that are so common today, I'll just bet you they're caused by vaccination. Let's see what these doctors think. After smallpox vaccination was found to be so financially profitable to the doctors and the serum manufacturers, serums for other diseases were invented and enforced with the same financial increase, but also with the same decrease in the elimination of the disease. Diphtheria is one of the most notable examples of this failure. The following table is one of the many records that show how the unvaccinated diseases declined more rapidly than those that were supposed to be wiped out or controlled by vaccines. This report was compiled before serums were invented for the other diseases shown. So here's a chart showing the decline of disease without any vaccination in England and Wales, looking at the death rate per million children living ages between birth and 15 years. So they looked at measles, scarlet fever, whooping cough, and diphtheria. Okay. Now remember, we're busy out here today. We're vaccinating people just by the millions for measles, scarlet fever, whooping cough, and diphtheria. From 1861 to 1880, in England and Wales, 1,062 children died from measles. There was no vaccination. Just, life goes on, you get measles, and if you survive it, you get lifelong immunity from it. But by 1941 to 48, the death rate from measles dropped to 62. With no vaccines, no vaccinations at all. So the vaccine for measles comes on the scene when the death rate from measles is already at an all-time low. What caused the rate of measles death to go from 1,000 to 62 over a period of about 80 years? What caused that? Was it sanitation? Was it better food? Well, whatever it was, it wasn't vaccination, and it went down. Now, take a look at what goes on today. They tell us today, if you don't have your measles shot, my God, you're risking your life and limb while you're going to die from measles. Boys and girls, death from measles has been going on for 5,000 years, and it's going to continue to go on. The weakest people die from measles. What you ladies need to do is to build your child's immune system from birth. And the best way to build your child's immune system is breastfeeding. I can tell you as a cattleman, I wouldn't think of bucket feeding a calf. Ladies, I have been raising cattle for years and years, and I can tell you, those bottle-fed and bucket-fed calves are sick, undernourished, scrawny runts. And the people of America that feed their children on formula are producing skinny, runchy, undernourished runts. So if you want to raise a good, healthy child that doesn't die from crib death, autism, measles, mumps, scarlet fever, whooping cough, and so on, you breastfeed them for 2 years. Yeah, I know it sounds kind of crazy, but you know, in the Bible, they didn't wean kids until they were two. And I'll just throw that out. Of course, I know you're busy with your career, ladies, and you haven't got time to raise healthy, well-nourished children. And so what you're doing here is you've got your career, but you've got these skinny, unhealthy, sick, undernourished runts. And you've got the poorest health in the world. You've got the best health system in the world with the poorest health. And I guess if that's what you want, you know, just keep after what you're doing. You've already succeeded. Now, if some of you out there say, well, gee, maybe we might want to change from doing that. Well, let's start going back to the Ten Commandment program. That Ten Commandment program, nurse the kid till he's 2 years old. Keep your old lady at home. Get off your dead ass, Bob, and go to work and support your family. Get off the dole. Get off the income tax and Social Security. It takes a third of everything you're making. You know, the reason you can't support your family is because you're paying all these taxes and supporting all this crap out here going on, giving your money away to the Cancer Society and vaccinating your kids at $25 a shot. I mean, come on. Quit throwing your money away, and you'll have more money to buy something more intelligent, you know, as soon as you wake up. Scarlet fever in England, 1861 to 1880, nearly 2,000 children died from it. 1941 to 48, 69 died. Whooping cough, 1,344 died. Now, this isn't every year. It's in the period 1861 to 1880. It's the death rate per million living children. And this is the rate of death, 1,973 per million. Okay, but it drops to 69 per million in the 1941 to 48 area. Whooping cough, 1,344 drops to 121. Diphtheria, 932 drops to 105. I mean, precipitous drops by hundreds of percentage points. Dropped 1,000% on measles, 2,000% on scarlet fever, 1,000% on whooping cough. 900% on diphtheria over this period of 80 years. No shots are involved here, no vaccinations. So here we see that measles just decreased 94.1% during this period. Scarlet fever decreased 99.7%. Whooping cough decreased 91%. While diphtheria, the disease that was supposed to be conquered by serum immunization, decreased by only 88.8%, which was the least of all. If left alone, it would have declined at the same rate as the others, or even faster, because it was the least prevalent. It'll be noted that in 1861, diphtheria was the least fatal of the children's diseases, but according to this report of the Ministry of Health, the 1948 record shows it to have increased to the second most deadly of the children killers with its 105 deaths per million, while whooping cough was only slightly higher with 121 deaths. Another report issued by the British Ministry of Health gives the diphtheria death rate from among 4 million children who were not immunized. And it gives a five-year period, 1945 to 49, in which the diphtheria death rate declined from 551 cases in 1945 to 63 cases in 1949. What caused this phenomenal drop of 87% in 5 years, when the record of immunized children showed a decline of only 88% in an 87-year period of immunization? Well, the credit cannot be claimed by the serum makers because the children were not protected, were they, by any vaccine. Now, the Ministry of Health attributed the rapid decline of the other diseases to improvements in sanitation, nutrition, housing, education, and social conditions, but diphtheria and smallpox were claimed to have declined because of vaccination. Well, if vaccination and immunization were preventatives of smallpox and diphtheria, they should have at least kept pace with the decline of the other diseases where no one was being vaccinated. Isn't that the purpose for vaccination? So here you have diseases declining at a higher rate without vaccination than with it. And yet what are we told in our colleges, universities? Hey, what are you young nursing students being told out there when you go to nursing school? Why, my God, if we didn't have vaccination, the whole human race would have been extinct years ago. Now, I told you about that young nurse that called, you know, from my little boy Ted's school. And she said, we're having vaccination day next Wednesday. Now, there's 42 kids in the class. 41 of them were going to be vaccinated, and only my boy Ted wasn't. And so she was just dumbfounded. She gave her best sales pitch trying to convince me that I'd have my kid vaccinated. And I said, well, see, I've already read these books. So I already knew the answer to the riddle. So I listened patiently. When she got all through with her sales pitch, I said, okay, lady, now all the rest of these children are going to be vaccinated, right? And she said, yep. And my little boy Ted's going to be the only one, number 42, no vaccination. She said, yep. I said, now, my little boy Ted, then, without being vaccinated, when he comes into the classroom, is no threat to the other 41 because they've all been vaccinated. They can't get the disease, can they? Nope, they can't get the disease. And if they've all been vaccinated and can't get the disease, then they can't give it to my little boy Ted, can they? Nope, they can't spread it either. I said, okay, that solves everybody's problem. My little boy Ted's no threat to the other 41, and the other 41 are no threat to my little boy Ted, so just leave him out of the vaccination. There was this long pregnant pause. I mean, this girl's been to college. This girl's got a teaching, you know, not teaching, but she's a nurse. She's got a nursing credential. She's licensed. Boys and girls, at any time, if we ever apply reason, logic, and common sense to this problem, it resolves itself very simply. You don't have to be real smart. Now, it could well be that if you're dishonest, you know, you can sit there and argue until the cows come home. Or if you've been educated to a point of permanent stupidity, you might not be able to pick up on this. And I don't know. Now, people will say to me, and I've had many people say, you know, Gordon, you are a nut. You're a fruitcake. Well, I'm not brain dead. And I can read just like you can. And I'm just a plumber. I'm a high school dropout. And maybe, you know, from your vantage point, you may be sitting there saying, well, that's your problem. You're just undereducated and stupid. I don't know, kids. I'll leave it to you. You can make your own decision. My decision is I'm not going to get the vaccine. And I haven't been vaccinated. And I'm an old man. I lived my life. I'm trying hard to eat the best I can. You know, I'm eating organic food and I'm washing my hands real good. But I'm not going to let anybody stick any bugs in my arm here. I'm not going to voluntarily let them do it. I mean, they might knock me down. And when I'm unconscious, you know, stick the needles in me. They could do that. I don't deny it. So let's note here that in 1861, diphtheria was the least fatal of the children's diseases. But according to this report by the Ministry of Health, by 1948, it became the number one killer of children. And that's why they're vaccinating for it. The other three, they're not vaccinated. Now, immunization increased diphtheria in some countries. Let's take a look at an increase. We go to France, and although France had rejected this immunization of diphtheria, after watching the English disaster that followed its use, France was pressured into submitting to this vaccination of diphtheria, or for diphtheria, after the German occupation in 1940. By 1941, most of the French children had been inoculated, after which the diphtheria incidence rose to 13,795 by the end of that year, 1941. By 1943, diphtheria had increased to 46,750. Hey, boys and girls. 1939, 1940, they don't have any diphtheria to speak of. It's not that they don't have any, but they got a little bit. The Germans come in 1940, conquer them, and they say, okay, everybody's got to be vaccinated for diphtheria. So at the end of 1941, they got 13,795 cases. They're pushing 14,000 cases by the end of the first year of vaccination. And by 1943, they've got 46,750. Say 13 into 46,000, 15, 30, 45. They got three times as many. What's the objective? We're trying to stamp out diphtheria. So we're vaccinating all the children. And what's the result? We get three times as much. Okay, well, you don't have to be real smart to figure out, let's quit doing that. Now, if on the other hand, you're the German occupiers and you say, we want to spread disease. So you come to the French and you say, look, we want to spread diphtheria among your population. Come on down here and get your shot. How many people are going to come down to that? So here's what's going on here. They come to us and they tell us, we want to save you. We want to protect you. We're from the government. We want to help. So we say, well, yeah, that makes sense. And so we go down and they shoot us up and then we get sick and die. Now, what would happen if they came to us and said, we are your occupiers, we hate your guts, we want to vaccinate you and kill you? You know, you people might resist. If they actually came to you and told you the truth and said, our agenda is to kill you, that's our purpose. Now, I showed you here a couple of programs back dealing here with the protocol where they said, we're going to use vaccination as the means for doing this, and then we want to prevent you from really thinking about anything yourself, so we're going to deflect you. We're going to deflect your mind to amusements, games, pastimes, excitements, and people's palaces. Such interests will distract their minds completely from questions on which we might be obliged to struggle with them. Hey, I want you guys to struggle with me. I want you guys to come over here and tell me why I should come out here and get your vaccine. Come on. Come forward now. Bring forth your proofs. All right, now immunization increased diphtheria in France. At the beginning of the Second World War, immunization was made compulsory in Germany, and diphtheria soared 150,000 cases in 1939. While in Norway, where they didn't have any vaccination, they had 50 cases. Hey, wake up here. The Norwegians in 1939 didn't vaccinate anybody, but they had 50 cases of diphtheria. The Germans vaccinated everybody, had 150,000 cases. Okay. Now, this leads me to a conclusion. If you want more disease, you need more vaccination. Now, that's what I do. So I'd tell anybody, anytime, anywhere, if your goal is to get a disease, vaccination is the best way that I know of to achieve that goal. Vaccination, get after it. Now, there was a decline of vaccination in the United States, but I'm going to cover that when we give you a reminder here, if I can find my paper. Yeah, here we go. I got to remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, the decline of vaccination in the United States. The overall picture for the United States has been toward a steady decline in smallpox since the gradual abandonment of mandatory vaccination laws in the various states. Only a few of the more backward states and some of the medically dominated institutions and businesses still impose compulsory vaccination laws on the people. In 1902, when vaccination was endorsed by the majority, the death rate from smallpox was 2,121. That was in the year 1902. By 1910, vaccination disasters had caused it to lose favor to such an extent that the smallpox death rate dropped down to 202. The serum makers used the frenzy of the First World War to work up a nationwide vaccination campaign that raised the smallpox death rate back up, and it hit 358 in 1919, and by 1921 it had increased to 642. Now, when the people of the United States began to notice that the vaccinated were the first ones to suffer, and they suffered the worst from the smallpox and flu, and then after, which was an after effect of the vaccination, they lost faith in it again to a large extent. And by 1927, the deaths had dropped down to 138, where it has been fluctuating ever since. Now, in contrast to our diminished smallpox rate under optioned vaccination, we have an excellent example of compulsory vaccination in our U.S.-dominated Philippine Islands. In a 10-year period from 1911 to 1920, 24.5 million vaccinations were given, which were compulsory, and resulted in 75,000 deaths. Now, before vaccination was introduced into the Philippines, the highest death rate ever recorded there was only 10% of that number. Now, after many years of thorough vaccination and revaccination, the death rate rose to 74%, which is the highest in history. In the United States, in 1919, when vaccination was indifferently accepted, the death rate from smallpox was only 358, while in the Philippines in 1919, under strict vaccination enforcement, the death rate from this cause was 18,000. In 1920, in vaccinated Italy, the smallpox death rate was 12,155, as compared to only 508 in the United States during the same period. Now, in spite of all of these cold, hard facts, and thousands of others like it, the promoters of these vaccines insist that vaccination has been a blessing to the world, and it has reduced disease. And this all goes to prove the old saying that figures don't lie, but liars can figure. Now, all of you people that go, you know, you nurses that go to nursing school, see, you don't look up these statistics and so on. You get a book. This book is approved by the hospital. It's approved by the U.S. government. It's approved by the pharmaceuticals and the American Medical Association. These people are promoting vaccination, and they want to indoctrinate you, the nurses and the doctors of America. And they have succeeded. I have never talked to a registered nurse or a medical doctor who is opposed to vaccination. And I talk to quite a few. You know, they come through the school every once in a while and say, hey, doc, what do you think about vaccination? Well, of course we vaccinate. Nurses, well, of course. Which demonstrates, without a doubt, the success of the propaganda campaign that goes on in our nursing and our doctors' institutions. Now, you doctors and nurses out there, why don't you look at these statistics? I mean, come on, you people are professionals. You are the smartest. You are the best and the brightest in America. So you've either got to be, one, stupid, two, dishonest, or three, willingly ignorant. You know, one, two, or three. Now, once in a while, you'll find people come in here and they'll say, well, I'm in favor of vaccination. I say, why? Well, because, you know, it saves lives. Have you ever read this book or seen this article? Now, there's hundreds of articles. I mean, any of you people can get on the internet and you can pull up articles from all kinds of, just plug in vaccination and you'll come up with all kinds of articles on vaccination. This book, I think, is probably the best that I've ever seen. It's definitely a 1 in 100 read. That's assuming that you can get a copy of it. I mean, they're about as rare as hen's teeth. They didn't make many to start with, just a few thousand. And I happen to have one of them. This is the only book that I've ever seen that ever went back historically to the beginning of this vaccination debacle and took a look at, well, how many people were dying in England in 1850, and then when you started vaccinations and how many died and blah, 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 and what's the rate of deaths per million, and then when you stopped, what happened? And then actually documented and put it out. And she didn't do it in just one country, which might be an anomaly. She did it in a number of them. And as we read the book, I mean, I can start going through here and just read and read and read country after country after country. They're all the same, every single one of them, no exception. So there's the story, and as I say, down at the Blue Room, read them and weep. Now, let me give you a little sampling of what the doctors that actually started this. I mean, these are all allopathic doctors. These are just Joe Sixpack doctor, and he bought into the vaccination program when it was promoted back in 1870, 80, 90, 1900. And then after they actually did it and they found out, hell, this doesn't work. This actually kills people. I had a doctor tell me that one time. I said, doc, how come you became a naturopath? And he said, well, I was trained as an allopathic doctor after World War II, but by the time I finished 2 years of medical practice, I was killing so many people, I thought I got to stop doing this. That was old Doc Lester. He said, you know, I changed from medical practice to natural healing because I was killing so many people. Vaccination hit by the doctors. From its inception down to the present time, vaccination has been denounced as dangerous, disease-producing, and even deadly. And by all thinking doctors who have investigated the facts and have had the courage to voice them, a few of these published statements from prominent doctors are presented here. Here's Dr. Alexander Wilder, editor of the New York Medical Times, professor of pathology in the United States Medical College of New York, and the author of Wilder's History of Medicine. I mean, this is a guy back around the turn of the century, had some credentials. He said, we have this observation. Vaccination is the infusion of contaminating element into the system. And after such contamination, you can never be sure of regaining the former purity of the body. Consumption follows in the wake of vaccination as certainly as effect follows cause. Dr. Walter M. James of Philadelphia said this, vaccination does not stay the spread of smallpox nor even modify it in those who get it after vaccination. It does introduce into the system and therefore contributes to the spread of tuberculosis, cancer, and leprosy. It tends to make more virulent epidemics of smallpox and to make them more extensive. It does just what inoculation did, cause the spread of disease. Dr. Kalb, Royal Examiner of Statistics for Bavaria, states, quote, examination shows vaccination a complete failure. In this single year, 3,994 vaccinated people died of smallpox. The total number attacked exceeded 29,000. All were vaccinated. Dr. R. Hall Bakewell, Vaccinator General of Trinidad, said, I have very little faith in vaccination, even as modifying the disease, and none at all as a protective in virulent epidemics. Personally, I contracted smallpox less than 6 months after a most severe revaccination. This doctor was in the vaccination business. His livelihood depended upon it, and he wanted to believe in it. In Trinidad, where vaccination was compulsory, he had ample opportunity to observe the full effects of vaccination on a large scale, and yet he voluntarily denounced the practice as a total failure. Dr. R.C. Carter of London reports, In looking over the history of vaccination for smallpox, I am amazed to learn of the terrible deaths from vaccination, amputations of arms and legs, foot and mouth disease, tetanus, lockjaw, septicemia, blood poisoning, cerebrospinal meningitis, unquote. That's the tip of the iceberg. Let's listen to some more. Dr. J.C. Ward of Harrogate, England, spelled H-A-R-R-O-G-A-T-E, Harrogate, I guess that's pronounced, among many others, confesses to a change of heart on the vaccination question in this statement. He said, quote, I believed that vaccination prevented smallpox. I believed that if it did not absolutely prevent it in every case, it at least modified the disease in some cases, and I believed that revaccination, if only frequent enough, gave absolute immunity. Experience has driven all of that out of my head. I have seen vaccinated persons get smallpox and persons who had been revaccinated get smallpox, and I have seen those who had smallpox get it a second time and then die from it. Professor Adolf Vogt, V-O-G-T, who held the chair of vital statistics and hygiene in Bern University for 17 years, said, quote, after collecting the particulars of 400,000 cases of smallpox, I am compelled to admit that my belief in vaccination is absolutely destroyed. Dr. Charles E. Page of Boston said, quote, I have been a regular practitioner of medicine in Boston for 33 years, and I have studied the question of vaccination conscientiously for 45 years. And as for vaccination as a preventative of disease, there's not a scrap of evidence in its favor. Injection of virus into the pure bloodstream of the people does not prevent smallpox. Rather, it tends to increase its epidemics and makes the disease more deadly. Of this we have indisputable proof. And in our country, the United States, cancer mortality has increased from 9 per 100,000 to 80 per 100,000, or fully 900% increase within the past 50 years. And no conceivable thing could have caused this but the universal blood poisoning now existing. Now, this doctor didn't make that statement that I made a little earlier, but there's another doctor in here if we run across it, good, and if we don't, there's a lot of pages in the book here. He said that in his experience, and he'd been working as a general practitioner for many years, he said he'd never seen a case of cancer in a person who had been unvaccinated. No unvaccinated person, he said, he'd ever seen a case of cancer. He said every case of cancer that he had seen, the people had been vaccinated, and that's what led me to the conclusion, well, let's test it this way. I want you people out there, let me give you another reminder. If you have a child with autism, send me an email and tell me that your child was never vaccinated. I would like to see 10 or 15 emails come in that says, hey, my child has autism and he was never vaccinated. I think that the same scenario would be true today. I think that in the final analysis, you will never find a case of autism in an unvaccinated person. I don't know that, but I'd like to find that out. Send me your email. Now, the governor has suspicions. The Honorable Percival P. Baxter, the governor of Maine in 1924, said this. He said, personally, I have grave doubts as to the efficacy of modern serums and vaccines, and I am convinced that commercialism has exercised a considerable influence upon some phases of modern medicine. God, did you hear that? He said, I'm convinced that commercialism has exercised a considerable influence upon some phases of modern medicine. I mean, talk about a cynic now, huh? How could he think such a thing? I'm telling you, boys and girls, the pharmaceutical industries are making a lot of money. Government, the press, medicine, the secret societies, the universities, the colleges. I mean, hell, all of these people get paid for selling vaccines. And they get paid for selling vaccines by people like you and me who buy them. Now, when we take a look at the statistics, what has this brought upon us? We've been fighting cancer now since Tricky Dick back in 70. Wasn't it 68, 9, 70, long in there? He says, I'm going to declare war on cancer. At that time, the cancer rate was this. In your lifetime, one person out of every four would expect to get cancer, 25% of us. In the 40 years, that's since 1970, and 40 years since then, it's now one out of two. It's been a total failure so far. Now, we have high hopes that we're going to find a cure to cancer, and we're spending billions of dollars a year on it. We're trying hard, but so far, it's been a total failure. Now, you know, there is a solution to the cancer problem, and it's the 19 health laws of the Bible. Now, tomorrow, the last program in this series, I'm going to give you these 19 health laws. I'm gonna sit here and take a look at my Mosaic Law book. I'm going to pull it down off the shelf, and I'm going to go through. There's 133 laws. 19 of them deal with health. And if you'll practice these 19 health laws, you won't get cancer. Furthermore, if you will practice these 19 health laws, they'll probably cure your cancer. There are 14 cures to cancer. Cut, burn, and poison are three of them. 11 more of them don't. They're natural in their origin and their application, and they all work. Cut, burn, and poison works 37% of the time. Now, it is true, if you've got cancer and your body is so weak, I had an old-timey naturopath explain it to me one time. He said, once your body energy decreases below 15%, you're dead. There's nothing we can do to revive you. If your body energy is still above 15% and we go to work on you, we can probably save you. If your body energy is weak and we use cut, burn, and poison 63% of the time, you're going to die. If your body energy is strong, your immune system's working really well, like that bicycle rider. He got cancer. Strong, healthy, young, virulent man. 37% of the time, cut, burn, and poison will work. No, at least for 5 years. But always remember this. If you get cancer and you do absolutely nothing, the average lifespan is 6 years. If you get cancer and you attack it with gusto, I mean, you get right after it, your average lifespan is 18 months. And when you die from cancer after 6 years, cost you nothing. If you die from cancer in 18 months, cost you $100,000. So it's your choice. These are choices that we all have to make. You know, do you want to die from cancer on average in 6 years after diagnosis doing nothing, or would you rather spend $100,000 and shorten the process and die a violent death in 18 months? That's the choice that you have to make. And everybody makes it. You know what they choose? In every case that I know of, except for, just know this one guy, my friend Rich, in every other case, they choose the $100,000 and 18-month violent death routine. Every time. And I've been watching this for, you know, many, many years. All right, so there's some stories, and God, there's more in here, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just on page 23. There's 200 pages here. If there's any way that you can get a copy of the book, I recommend it highly. 1 in 100 read, The Poison Needle, Eleanor McBean. Remember our four sources over here. It could be bravenewbookstore.com or your health food store or your local bookstore. Give it a try. Hey, I'm running out of time here. I got to give you a final reminder here and remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. And all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.